I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times. When she was a young AP bureau chief covering the Illinois legislature, Terry Mutchler fell in love with State Senator Penny Severance. They kept their relationship secret, largely because it could ruin their careers. And while gay marriage was illegal at the time, they considered themselves married. In her memoir, Under This Beautiful Dome, Mutchler writes about the pain and fear of living in the closet, especially after Severance was diagnosed with cancer. She died in 1998. Much has changed for gay and lesbian couples since that time. And Terry Mutchler joins us to talk about her life then, her life now. Today, she is executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records. She lives with her partner, Maria Papakostaki, who is a poet and a psychotherapist. And Terry Mutchler, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's always nice to be here. Thank you, Marty.
Tell us when you first met Penny Severance. This takes us back to the 1990s.
I was in the Illinois Capitol newsroom, and I was editing a story that was frustrating me, and I needed a little break, and I walked out into the dome, and under the dome, in fact, and I saw this splash of red against what looked like a Brooks Brothers, store, and I just saw this woman, and I just stood there for a minute. It was like this bolt of electricity had gone through me. I didn't know who she was, and I presume she was a lobbyist, which she always
had that look about her.
Yeah. Well, I always paid a great price for that misinterpretation.
Yeah.
But a few days later, I was going through the directory of public officials to check someone else for the story we were writing, and I saw her picture, and I was like, "Uh-oh, this is not good," because she was a senator,
and you were a journalist.
And I was the AP bureau chief, and so. There was something incredibly magnetic and something that I still to this day can't explain, but something inside me just shifted. And Penny and I got to know each other and obviously fell in love.
Had you ever had that feeling about a woman before?
I had not.
Did you know you were a lesbian at the time?
I did, although I didn't identify that way. It was, I was very, very, very deeply closeted. And I would say things like... I would say things like, well, I just happened to fall in love with a woman. I had been involved with men as well. And when I met Penny, I knew that I had met the rest of my life.
Were you closeted to yourself then? I mean, just
I was.
Based on what you just said.
Yeah,
there?
I was. And I was very tormented by it as well, although I wasn't tormented enough to not move forward with my life. But it took me a very long time, primarily after Penny's death, to come to terms with that whole knot of emotion and secrecy and things like that.
Well, I can't even say in the beginning you lived together because you would spend the night, but you would park your car a couple of blocks away and I guess kind of sneak in and out of the house.
Yeah, I actually, Penny and I, we lived technically about 45 minutes apart, but we just kept my apartment for show. What we actually did was we parked several miles away from each other's homes, and no matter what the weather was, we sort of lived in this glass house, but I guess we felt as though nobody would see us if we walked the 2 miles. Or the kind of crazy ruses that we went through to keep this secret was it was toxic and it was sad. And well, comedic, if it weren't so sad.
Well, and I think today, maybe even people that were young or not even alive in the 1990s or might not remember back that far, just what it was like to be a gay or lesbian couple. I mean, how hard it was to be a couple.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I write about in the book is how, we'd get up at 4 in the morning and we were hiding this life. But I talked about in the book about this ritual we would do when the cleaning lady would come. And, we were so deeply closeted that we would get up early and we would take a lint roller and we would actually, go over the sheets and, make sure that I had very long hair at the time, make sure that there was no proof of my own existence in my own home.
Was she as afraid as you were? I mean, she was a state senator at the time.
She was afraid from a political sense. I had the extra layer of kind of the spiritual conundrum that I don't think Penny ever had. I mean, she one time asked me, what did I think that God thought of this relationship? And, being the quintessential journalist, I'm like, well, what do you think he thinks?
Right. Deflecting the question.
Exactly. Right. Penny was in completely, and you know, her fear was more surrounded by she would have lost her seat, no doubt. And politics really was her lifeblood.
At the time, I mean, you were, as you said, AP bureau chief covering the legislature at the time. There are some rules and regulations and certainly some ethical issues at stake here, because here you were a journalist, yes, a closeted lesbian at the time, but a journalist covering the legislature and perhaps even covering her as well.
Yes. And it was a significant ethical breach. There is absolutely you know, there's just no way to sugarcoat that.
Right.
It was,
it's just the truth.
It is, the truth of it is that that when I fell in love with Penny, what I should have done is what I had done when I had been covering politics in Pennsylvania in the late 80s. I had been involved with a guy. I'd started dating a guy who was on the speaker's staff. I went to the AP bureau chief. I write about this in the book. And I said, you know, look, Rich, you know, Jack and I have started dating, and I think this is going to be serious. And so what he did properly was remove me from any coverage of the House. When I fell in love with Penny, and I could not – I didn't have the courage to do that. And, you know –
Because she was a woman, you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there was no way that I could bring myself to go to someone, and I couldn't even say it to myself. But yet – even though I didn't have the courage to do that, I also didn't have the desire to not become more deeply involved. And so from an ethical standpoint, I completely failed. It's one of the things I write in the book is what there was an editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer who said, you know, I don't really care if you cover the circus. I don't care if you sleep with the elephants. Just don't cover the circus. And, you know, I knew – it's interesting because every single day of our relationship at the beginning, Penny and I spoke more about the ethical conundrum than we did about the secrecy and the reality of what life we were building underground.
I mean, it sounds like you have pretty serious regrets about that ethical breach.
As a journalist, you know, I actually hesitate to call myself a former journalist sometimes because of that breach being so significant. And what's interesting to me is ethics and journalism were always something that was so significantly important to me. At one point, I had been sentenced to 6 months in prison for refusing to reveal a source. And so on a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. So it was something that was in my very fiber. Obviously, I failed.
Yeah.
And that is – I write about that in an unvarnished way in the book.
Well, you also became her – I forget what your exact title was. But,
Press secretary,
right. Exactly.
What happened was after Penny became ill, she was diagnosed – one of four diagnoses that she had with breast cancer. When she was first diagnosed, I was so confused and so closeted and had such a spiritual conundrum that I was very convinced that – and I write this in the book – I was convinced that this was God punishing us for the – you know, for being lesbians. And in a moment of absolute desperation and confusion with no help from the outside – I made a pact with God, and you know, I promised him that if he would heal her, that I would leave her, and I did. I left and went to Alaska, and I of course told Penny that that it was to solve the ethical conundrum, and I got there. It lasted a day before I came to my senses, and then I came back. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to Illinois, I became Penny's press secretary as a way that we could be close always, you know, even in public without raising too many eyebrows.
It's an interesting God you were praying, or vision or idea of God that you were praying to at that time.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of
it's a punishing God.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, for me, it's been a, you know, there's always the God of love, the God who also, you know, in this way, in my mind, at least, was punishing us. But, you know, that was really my failure. Not, you know, I had such self-loathing for so many reasons. And secrecy was quite a part of my young life as well. And so it was sort of a perfect storm of emotion that led me to a very complicated place where instead of using faith as a relief and a help, I used it as a fulcrum to kind of catapult me further away from reality.
And I do want to talk a bit about your childhood, but you also mentioned in the book that people would play parlor games. Are Penny and Terry, are they a couple or
right.
not? So which
right.
raises the question about just what a good job you were or weren't
right.
doing.
Right. You know, many of my very close friends were journalists who are now one covers the White House, covers the Obama administration for the Los Angeles Times. Many of them were at the Chicago Tribune and the New York Times and the Washington Post. And so later it became known to me, they told me this many years later, that, you know, after dinner they'd be having brandy and cigars and they'd be like, so what is really going on there? You know, and so that was a bit of a parlor game, as I write in the book.
You also, I mean, you talk about being a liar, I mean, about and not, I mean, the idea that you end up sort of living a lie in order to protect yourself, yeah. to cover your tracks. And how painful, obviously, that is, knowing mm-hmm. what was going on sort of deep inside.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I've been getting a lot of correspondence now from people I know and some that I don't know, many that I don't, about the book. And I received one over the weekend that had a very powerful line in it to mm-hmm. me. And the woman spoke about how she's an educator, and she spoke about how this book for her demonstrated once again how honest – otherwise honest people turn into telling lies to protect themselves from themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, clearly, I mean, we had lying down to a political science.
You were good at it, right?
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say that, particularly in my work now. But the truth is, the truth is we lied. And we lied about everything. We lied about where we were on vacation, who we were with. We lied about our relationship to other people. And yet, so very early on, we were so smitten with one another. I remember I write in the book about one day when Penny woke me up at like 4 a.m. and I thought it was going to be about this political race she was involved in. And she said to me, Terry, I love you, and if I could marry you tomorrow, I would. And of course, my response was, I would marry you today. And we actually did have when we traveled internationally, and then we had come home, and Penny had given me there was a bracelet and a ring because we couldn't wear the same rings. I mean, it was deeply painful things that I think many people today can't really grasp.
And we're almost up in a break here. Did you know anyone who was out at the time? And again, we're talking about the 1990s.
I did not.
I mean,
and,
just...
later, you know, after Penny's death, I came to, you know, pay attention in a different way, even during our life together. But that I'm aware of, there was no one that was an out gay or lesbian couple in the town that we lived.
That's Terry Mutchler. She's currently executive director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records, also author of a new book. It's a memoir titled Under This Beautiful Dome, subtitled A Senator, A Journalist, and the Politics of Gay Love in America. It is about her falling in love with State Senator Penny Severance, who actually died in 1998. This was a closeted relationship back in the 1990s. And we are talking about her life then and now, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. If you're just joining us, Terry Mutchler is our guest, as I said, executive director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records, author of this new memoir called Under This Beautiful Dome, A Senator, A Journalist, and the Politics of Gay Love in America. You can also join our conversation. Go to radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. You grew up in Pennsylvania. You describe growing up in a family that on the one hand could be tender and loving, and it seemed like within, you know, a moment or two could become, quoting you here, bloody and violent. Tell us about your family.
In many ways, I have a very loving family. I'm the youngest of seven. My father was a military man who then did construction work, and my mother, to her great credit, raised seven of us on a shoestring, pretty much.
Yeah, that's
that
tough.
Is not easy. But also, my family, while it was very loving in many ways, it was deeply violent. I had there was a lot of alcoholism involved in my young life. I was a victim of sexual assault, also, and those kinds of tragedies, I guess, for lack of a better word. You know, you can't really assimilate those when you're eight, 8 years old or six. And so you just have this presence of understanding that, you know what, I can't tell people this. Or, you know, kids never came over to our house because, you know, you know, it's like, what's going to happen? And there's this layer of fear that, you know, comes with protecting the family secrets at all cost that I think really did set me up for that secret life. The other piece of it, though, and I think my father did suffer from alcoholism and prayed every single day of his life about it. It was something that really tormented him. We had been raised Catholic, and then religion did play a significant role in our lives. My family met a minister by the name of William Branham, who was an evangelist, and they were very drawn to his ministry, and it brought a great deal of order to a very chaotic life. But it, you know, there was also some tentacles with that that yeah. I twisted.
Well, was he able to give up drinking?
He did.
With the help of this minister?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting story. The short version merely is that he had tried AA and he had relapsed many times. And it was, it's too long to explain, but faith really was a fulcrum for him. And he ended up he went on a 3-day bender and he came home and he told my mother that that was it. And he never drank again. And for the last 25 or 30 years of his life, he was sober.
You mentioned sort of growing up in a family like that, you learn to keep people at a distance.
Oh, yeah.
You learn to keep people away. You learn to keep secrets. And I guess even divert attention from problems at home. But, you know, as you said, you were sexually abused as a child. There was a neighbor boy and then a relative.
Right.
Something, again, you had to keep secret.
Right.
Or you felt you had to keep secret.
When I was assaulted by a neighbor, I had been down fishing at a creek, and I immediately went home and immediately told my mother. And it was something, for whatever reason to this day, I don't know, that she could not handle. And she kind of fell apart in that. And so we never called the police. We never called a doctor. They never spoke to the parents of the boy. And my mother had dispatched one of my young brothers to go kind of solve this. It's unbelievable, even as I sit here on Radio Times telling that story. Then
it's not an uncommon story, though.
Right.
I
see that now. But then when a relative started to abuse me, I was convinced that if my family couldn't help me, if my mother could not help me when it was a neighbor, there's no way in my family that I could go to her about a family member. And so I suffered that one in silence until for many years, a couple of decades.
In fact, you write here, ensuing confusion shocked and haunted me. I felt as though I had to split into two people, neither worthy of help and both unable to speak. I mean, that's a huge burden for a little girl to try to carry.
It is, and it was, and I think it is also, candidly, when I was locked out of my home with Penny, I felt that split again, and I think that kind of re-triggering that trauma is what did not allow me to speak up for myself, which I find, as a lawyer, mm-hmm. as a journalist, I find that very astounding, even now, as I wrote this book, which took 10 years, extremely painful parts of it, it's amazing what trauma can really steal your voice.
Well, what's so interesting is, I mean, certainly from the outside, you're a very accomplished person.
Well, thank you, Marty.
I mean, you've had all these, you're a lawyer, you have an important position in Pennsylvania, you've mm-hmm. done other things as well. But inside, sort of feeling not, what, good enough?
Definitely not good enough. And, you know, I think that one of the things that I've learned, interestingly, through this book, I mean, you obviously learn a lot when you sit down alone and write, but I also learned how humor both carried me, but humor also harmed me, because as a child, even as an adult, when you have those insecurities, the first thing you want to do is put everybody else at ease. Mm-hmm. You're using humor in a way that really keeps you away from a truth. And, you know, it's like anything, you know, there's good and there's bad, and there's strength and there's weakness. And I learned a lot in this book.
But isn't it interesting? You're the executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records, the idea of transparency. Yeah. People can get information about government officials.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting to me. I will say that ever since I've been a child, you know, obviously I wanted to be a lawyer. But then as I became a reporter and we would be denied as reporters information, it became a passion. And that's how I ended up getting into this from this side. It is ironic. And I think it sends fear through all of us, myself included, in some way in the government community. But I try to remind people that my job is about records, not about personal lives. So,
well, you've written a very personal book. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. This is Terry Mutchler, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. As I said, she is the executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records and author of a new memoir called Under This Beautiful Dome, A Senator, A Journalist, and the Politics of Gay Love in America. And it is about falling in love with a state senator in Illinois, a woman named Penny Severns, apparently much beloved in that state, including by someone named Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. They kept their relationship secret. This was back in the 1990s. And Terry Mutchler writing about the pain, the fear of living in the closet. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get Kathy from Westchester to join our conversation. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, hi. I just wanted to share that being an open gay woman, that back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and even up to today, there's a lot of different careers where you have to keep everything fairly hush-hush. Even today, there's a number of states where you can be fired for being a lesbian or gay person. Well, just wanted to share that part.
No, absolutely, Kathy. Thanks for calling in, and that's absolutely true, Terry.
Yes, and, you know, Kathy, thank you for the call. And, you know, for me, one of the great, if there's anything good that's come out of this story for myself is I will never lie again, and I will never hide again. And, you know, if I have to, hope I never have to, but, you know, if I have to live under a bridge, I'm going to live true to who I am and to my life. But I do think that people share that. One of the as Penny and I inched toward coming out, I remember we had been just talking about let's just talk to our friends. And at that time, there were two significant things that happened in Illinois. One was a state's attorney in the very county we lived in went on a hunt to, in his own words, rid the parks of faggots. And the second thing was, and I really thought that this was going to be the moment where the citizenry would come and there would be a protest and this would be the moment to step forward. The citizenry did step up, but they stepped up in favor of him. And the other thing that happened, there was a woman who was the mother of a gay sailor who had been beaten to death on a ship, and she had come to Illinois to testify. And she came before Penny's committee, and Penny said that while this woman was testifying, that there were other lawmakers kind of snickering, making jokes. And even back in the newsroom, I had folks that were saying, oh, he should have known better than to, you know, join the Navy as a gay man. And it's like, so that kind of set us back. But what Kathy from Westchester says is absolutely true. And I think that's something that people face every day. But also, I try to keep them with an eye toward the consequences. I mean, the consequences for me were being locked out of our home and a whole depth of other issues. And so whether you're gay or straight, you know, married or single, you know, one of the messages of this book is to live openly and honestly.
Kathy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Just to continue the story, Penny, as you mentioned, she did she got cancer. I mean, she died in 1998, and this seemed like obviously a very difficult time in your relationship, and her struggle with that horrible disease took a real toll on not just her health, but obviously on being able to take care of her, but knowing the loss that prevented you from doing that in the full and complete way.
You know, when I look back, it's extremely painful to think about even like the night that Penny died or when hospice finally came to our home. You know, when you're trying to hide who you are living in a house, it's very difficult. And it's very sad to me to say that we would do things like arrange the blankets so people couldn't see us holding hands. I mean, here's a woman who's dying and, you know, my spouse who's dying, and the ways that we still at that point, although we had been trying to come out, the Thanksgiving before she died, we were going to disclose this to my family and to hers. And then the cancer recurred a fourth time in her skull. Mm. So it was a very difficult time. Penny refused to step down from her political activities. I remember we were driving up for her to have a bone marrow transplant and Hillary Clinton calling and saying they were friends, lowercase f.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're talking politics and what's happening in Decatur. And, you know, I remember you could tell from the hearing just went into the conversation that Senator Clinton was like, maybe we should just focus on you for a second, you know, but that was not something Penny could ever do.
So were you the friend? Was that the euphemism used to describe you?
Yes, or the press secretary.
Or the press secretary.
And so, you know, like during those 6 weeks when Penny was in isolation at Loyola University in Chicago, I was there day and night. And, you know, I write in the book that I wonder if they thought that all press secretaries were this loyal and devoted. But, you know, we were finding our way out and into our own lives, and we ran out of time.
It's very difficult, actually, to read about her funeral. And it seemed with her family that and she had a twin sister has a twin sister named Patty, and Patty seemed to have seemed like a switch almost went off that once Penny died, somehow you were suspect. You were not part of the family.
You know, to this day, that's a very, very painful heartbreak for me because I loved Patty as a sister, and I feel like after Penny died, I lost her entire family in one fell swoop. Patty's family. I will never understand it. I don't know. I've tried many times, not in years, but I tried several times to kind of bring a chord to that. But I wrote in the book that in a letter that I had written to Patty trying to reach a chord that it seemed that when I was family until Penny took her last breath.
Yeah.
And I expected that from Penny's father. Penny and he had a troubled relationship. I did not expect it from her identical twin who we put an extraordinary amount of trust in. We made her the executor of a public will so that nobody would still know. But happily, Penny's family was bigger than just her twin, and Penny's brother Rod and his wife Jane have been lifesavers. Mm. They're still very close to myself, and I just saw them recently, and they really got it. Unfortunately, they didn't have the legal power to help.
At her funeral, you sat 15 rows back, as you describe. You wanted to say something or be part of the ceremony, and you were prevented from doing that.
Yes. After Penny died, she died on a Saturday morning, and then because she was running for statewide office at the time, and I as her press secretary, about 10 hours after her death, I had to do a statewide news conference in live announcing Penny's death. It would be very odd for a press secretary not to speak at a candidate's funeral, but her sister forbade me from doing it. And when we walked into the church, you kind of have to. The comparison for people here to understand who Penny was, it would be very similar to an Enred Dell. You know, very
she was
beloved,
that well known.
There's bridges, there's libraries, there's many things named after her. She was truly that beloved. And when I walked into the funeral, we were escorted in, you know, you have 2,000 dignitaries that were at the funeral, and the first time that the House and Senate ever came as a unit to a funeral, and the pastoral aide came up to me and said, you know, my knees were buckling, I didn't think I was going to make it, and she said, I'm going to show you to your seat, and I was like, oh, thank you, you know, and then we walk and we're sitting 15 rows back. And it was Penny's brother kept trying to get me to move forward, but there was a lot of focus, and I didn't want to, I couldn't assimilate quick enough to figure it out, and I just sat there. And then afterward, the incredible pain, I was directed to a vestibule off to the side while the quote unquote family was escorted to the front of the church for the dignitaries. It was extremely painful.
Do you think this was because of her twin sister, or just the family in their own grief?
I think that it was – I know, in fact, that it really was her twin and her father that that prevented this. And one of the chapters I write about in the book is about I was presented with an American flag, and that was a secret. It was secretly arranged without Penny's sister and father knowing, and it was the only slight recognition that I received as a press secretary.
I mean, this is obviously your story, but do you think it also reflects stories for other people at that time?
Absolutely.
When this is a committed, loving relationship, but when something like a funeral happens, you're not part of the family.
Yeah. I think that grief does very strange things to people. Mm-hmm. And when you already have a less than, you know, when you're keeping a secret, it's hard to kind of get recognition of that secret during a funeral, basically.
Sure.
But I know that there are I am one of many stories that, you know, people who've been locked out of their homes or who haven't, you know, had the recognition of being able to take care of their dying mate. That I did not have. I was right there front and center in Penny's health care, and I'm grateful for that. However, I in retrospect, it's very difficult. I still haven't even been able to reread my own chapter of the night that I was locked out of our home and walking away from an entire, like, you know, for your listeners, you know, just look around your house or your kitchen. Just think of walking away and...
Or being prevented from going inside or even taking
right.
anything. Terry Mutchler, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, we're talking about her new book. It's a memoir called Under This Beautiful Dome, A Senator, A Journalist, and the Politics of Gay Love in America. And again, to join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen talking with Terry Mutchler. She is the executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records. It allows citizens access to government information through the Right to Know law. Mutchler had a secret relationship with an Illinois state senator many years ago when lesbian couples were afraid to be open and out about their love lives. She writes about the pain and fear of living in the closet in her new memoir. It's called Under This Beautiful Dome. Going back to this funeral, and you mentioned the fact that you were locked out of the house. I mean, mm-hmm. essentially sort of locked out of the family, the house, and it sounds like even locked out of the ability to mourn this woman that
Absolutely.
You love so much.
You know, it's profound the ways in which ritual is important. And as I write in the book, you know, every widow should have the right to go through her husband's things and or partner's things, and the same in the reverse. And here, I had come home. I was in my third year of law school when all this transpired.
Right.
And Penny and I had a house together, and we had an apartment together near the law school. And when I had come home 3 weeks after she died, the locks were changed on my home, and that day is one that is forever seared in, you know, in my heart and mind. And, you know, and the reality is it's easy to say, oh, someone did this to me. But I played a very key role in handing over my key, so to speak.
So handing over the keys to
Absolutely.
Your house.
Absolutely. I played a key. Every lie that we told, every time that we did not step into our own lives, I created the opportunity for someone else to take my, you know, if I wasn't going to speak about my life, somebody else was going to do it for me. And what they did is they put me in the box of good friend, press secretary Terry, as opposed to lesbian, dead mate, Penny Terry. And, you know, that's very, very brutal component. And, you know, you also have to recognize one of the things I recently was able to do the Rachel Maddow show about this. One of the components that she focused on that I thought was interesting was Penny was a true rising star in the Democratic Party. She was friends with Barack Obama. She was his official mentor. She was close with the Clintons and someone who clearly would have been the first female governor in Illinois. And so there were so many different versions of ourselves that were out there. And I think that the night of being locked out of our home and walking away because I didn't have that voice is something that, of course, I regret deeply.
Well, it'd be interesting to know. I don't know if you do know about those people that knew Penny and thought of you as her press secretary, if they have read the book and what they what they think about what was going on sort of in plain sight but also out of sight.
Yeah, and it's been one of the things that's phenomenal when you speak about, you know, not just being locked out of a home because there's something that's almost aggressive about that. Like I haven't yet found a good way to describe that. But I remember being at the funeral home and, you know, talking about what I knew Penny would want for her funeral arrangements and the funeral director saying, this has got to come from family. And I remember wanting a copy of her death certificate. And what's phenomenal to me is just this past week, a very kind state official in Illinois sent me a letter and said that he couldn't bear reading about what happened after the funeral, and he sent me an official copy of Penny's death certificate. And I said to my partner now, I said, you know, it's so interesting that we had to fight so hard to even get the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like to fight so hard to get a death certificate? I mean,
you went on a bit of a tailspin. I mean, clearly you were depressed. You started drinking too much. You would hang out at bars. You said an interesting thing about bars is that where many people go to lie or they're drunk, but it's also a sort of a strange place. Maybe you can be honest in a bar with strangers.
Well, listen, I
bottle of something.
It was probably the darkest time in my entire... I know it was. It was the darkest time in my entire life. I instead of seeking a good set of skills and therapy, I instead devolved into drinking daily, basically replaying some of the scenes of my own youth, you know. And I did, you know, there was a particular bar in Chicago that was a lesbian community bar. And what I found is, you know, that I could tell the truth about my life with Penny there primarily because I didn't think they would believe me, first of all. You know, there's no, you know, why would I be sitting
this
in that
well-known
bar? Right,
state
exactly.
State senator.
And, you know, I really did hit rock bottom before I climbed out.
Mm. You have a, shall we say, rocky relationship with Penny's sister, Patty. But at one point she says to you, when you had a number of conversations with her, she says, I was worried that you were going to write a book about Penny. That's what I thought, and this would be terrible. Mm-hmm. You've written a book about Penny.
When the scene that you described there is when I was locked out of the home and Patty disclosed that she and her father had a key, but I would not, I was sitting on the floor, and it's very hard to describe, but, you know, I was trying to get to the bottom of, you know, why was this happening? And she had talked to me about, I had taken some letters that Penny and I had had, and she was very upset by this. And, you know, Penny and I had like 800 love letters. Wow. It was really a love story. Among everything else, it was a love story. And the other thing that was significant that Patty had said to me was, when I finally had the courage to speak to her directly about this, she said to me, you were not married, Terry. Do not say you were married. Penny took you under her wing. That is all. And that quote is also seared in my mind and heart forever. And one of the tellings in this book is about that very dichotomy. And also, look, people latch onto what they want to see. And if it's to their advantage, you know, they're going to go right for your Achilles heel. And our Achilles heel was that we had tried to convince the world that we were nothing but friends. And
so has the family read the book, or have you gotten response?
Penny's brother, Rod, he was involved very heavily, he and his wife, in all the drafts of the book, in fact. I know that Patty's oldest daughter, who is now a lawyer who focuses on immigration and gay rights, has tweeted about it. But whether Patty has read the book, I don't know the answer to that.
Do you want her to, or do you have any feelings about that?
You know, I still is you know, I'm sure this is a therapy session, but I still have tender feelings for Patty. And if for no other reason than her sister loved her very much. And out of my respect for my spouse, you know, I would be as kind as I could to Patty and her family, as difficult as that is. I hope that many people read the book. I hope that everyone that does read the book, if you're in a gay relationship particularly, that you go get a will and that you, you know, take care of that component of your life and really start asking yourselves, how is my behavior in service to what I care about? And something that a Harvard professor had said to me at a fellowship, in the last couple of years, because you really need to take a hard look. And if we would have had one person that would have been able to say to us, and what is this craziness that you're doing? You know, I mean, there's a scene in the book where I talk about hiding naked behind a furnace when her parents show up.
Yes.
And I had been at the house. There was nowhere to hide. I hadn't met them yet. So I ended up naked behind a furnace. In our basement. I wish they had found me.
Yeah.
I wish that someone along the way, the doctor who was a wonderful doctor who had introduced me to the surgeon as Penny's long-term companion, would have pulled me aside and said, you know, this is really okay. Let me help you.
You think that would have been enough? I mean, someone to sort of honor, recognize, acknowledge?
At the time, I probably would have pushed it away, but I know that Penny and I would have discussed it ad nauseum. Right. And
that's what you did?
Oh, yeah.
Let me read an email from Beth. She says, in your book, you consider suing. What made you not sue? You would perhaps have set a strong precedent. In addition, the family was so difficult, it would have been fair to you to do so. The book was excellent, sad, and funny. We should make sure, yeah, there are funny parts as well.
There's just a few funny parts. But the reality is that had I been out, I would have. First of all, it wouldn't have happened. If I would have been out, I would have been able to have a voice, and I would not have let someone lock me out of my own home, our own home. One of the reasons that I couldn't ultimately pull the trigger on a lawsuit was because it would have required me to step up and say, I, Terry Mutchler, am a lesbian, and I could not do that.
Yeah. When did you do that? I mean, when did you make that very straightforward declaration?
About 2 years after Penny died, mm-hmm. I decided that even though my family knew something that I was going to tell each and every one of my siblings, and I was going to tell my parents, and I came out, and what's sad to me in some way is I came out in defiance and as a result of grief, not as a result of a celebration or happiness or anything like that. And after Penny died, I couldn't tell people what was going on in my life without disclosing what really happened. And I had that very summer after she died, I had the great fortune of having a clerkship at the White House under President Clinton. And they were some very dark days because, you know, you're in the executive office, and there's a great opportunity as a young lawyer to absorb all of it. And instead, I was, you know, shuffling home and drinking heavily.
Mm. What was the response of your family?
My brother, one of my brothers, said to me long before, he said he knew, he had asked me many years ago, he said, hey, you're not one of those funny women, are you? And I, I said, you know, Scott, that's the language. And I said, I'm hysterical, actually. most of my family was like, you know, thanks for the newsflash 20 years later,
Like we would have liked to have known this 20 years ago?
Some. Not others. My mother had a very interesting reaction. My mother said that, you know, she would love me. I was her daughter. But how was I going to get past the man upstairs referring to God? And that was still my father, who my mother forbid me to tell for many years. And I finally overlooked that and did end up telling him before he died. He said to me that he knew it. He loved Penny. He knew what our relationship was. And he cautioned me not to try to think for God. And I remember saying to him, you know, Dad, that's wonderful, but man, you could have told me that, like, you know, when I was 18, right? But one of the things that this book has also taught me is a great deal of compassion for other people. And humans are complex, you know, human beings. And, you know, it's we put our interpretations. Of course, I have 1,000 interpretations as to why Patty did what she did, but the truth is I'll never know. unless she decides to tell me, which I don't see happening. But it's, you know, it's a, above everything else, Marty, for me, this is a love story. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the greatest love stories that I've had the privilege to fall in love with, I guess. And that's what should have driven our life instead of the fear and the politics. I mean, I have a chapter in there called Diagnosis, Malignant Politics. Politics played a key role in our lives and in the toxicity of the way we lived our lives.
What's so interesting, though, and it seems perhaps it's a circular argument, but it seems the more people have come out, mm-hmm. the more you see there's gay marriage in Pennsylvania. I mean, you know, that, who would have thought that in sort of early 21st century that we would see something like that? But it is an interesting kind of paradox. I mean, it's not a paradox, but just a reaction. The more people come out, the more people realize, oh, I know someone who's gay.
Well, you know, it's one of the interesting things is I had the privilege of giving a signed copy of the book to President Obama and Mrs. Obama. And one of the things that I had written in it was, you know, yes, we have the sea change legally, but there also has to be a healing of the minds, because it's still there's still something, even though you have the legal components, there's still something a little off for people about this. And also the reality is, even though we see the sea change, and there's a lot of people saying, come on in, the water's fine. You, as an individual, still have to make that leap. Mm. And that is very hard. It was for me.
We should say there's a happy ending here in that you have a partner who's watching and listening to the show here. So how did you meet Maria Papakostaki?
A friend of mine, when I was in that very deep spiral, said to me 6 years after Penny died, look, you are not doing well. And you need to come to this writing retreat in California. And I was reluctant, but two things happened, obviously, at that writing retreat. One was that I told this story for the first time.
Really?
And one was I looked up and I saw this incredibly beautiful Greek poet, and I didn't know she was a poet then. And I had felt a shift, and I knew I had met the rest of my life again.
Was that electric bolt?
And
or
it was a little deeper than the electric bolt. It was different, but it was profound. And one of the greatest things about my life now is, you know, first of all, imagine someone, a partner, giving up every night and weekend and vacations for about 3 years so that you could get this book into the world. That's the real love story, candidly. But I've learned a lot about myself, and with Maria and I together, I just think that the best is yet to come.
Mm. Well, on that note, Terry Mutchler, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And again, the book is called Under This Beautiful Dome, subtitled A Senator, A Journalist, and the Politics of Gay Love in America. And again, Terry Mutchler is the executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can download a podcast of the show. You can also get information about Radio Times on the Road, which is next Tuesday in New Jersey. We want you to join us. And you can also find out about Facebook and Twitter and the archives as well. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show was produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, with Quinn Libson. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.